Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey there. We'll be back with a new episode for you next week. In the meantime, we're sharing one of our favorites from the archive in case you missed it the first time around. Enjoy.
And so I was thinking and looking through those three images, and I thought, okay, you know what? Miles Davis, trumpet player, he reinvented himself several times throughout his career. And for me, he's the kind of ultimate innovator in music. He also gave a platform for many young musicians to join his band and learn and become a coach and give them guidance. For me, Miles Davis was the innovator there. And then if you think about Sarah Vaughan, she's a singer. Well, if somebody can get into your soul by storytelling, then it is Sarah Vaughan. And so for me, that she represents that ultimate storytelling piece. And then Art Blakey is the drummer. And so he is, for me, representing timing and rhythm. And what is more important in innovation than timing?
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy.
I'm Jamie, and this is Clever. Hey, before we get started, could we ask a favor? Could you give us a review and a rating on iTunes? It really helps increase Clever's visibility on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, we'd love it if you subscribed too. Or you could go to our website for the link to review or to subscribe, or you can do it right from your phone. But don't do it while you're driving. Make sure you pull over.
So now on with the show. Today we are talking to Eric Quint, Chief Design Officer of 3M. You all know 3M is the maker of Post-it notes, Scotch tape, and Scotch Blue Painter's Tape. Also, sandpaper, spray glue, duct tape, safety glasses, dust masks, air filters, water filters, and Scotch-Brite sponges. And these are just a teeny tiny tip of the 3M iceberg. 3M is a science and technology innovation powerhouse that touches all facets of the built world. With 46 technology platforms ranging from adhesives and abrasives to ceramics and nanotechnology, and over 90,000 employees globally, 3M impacts industries like architecture and construction, aerospace, healthcare, transportation, school supplies, safety, and sports and recreation.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah.
Everywhere. Anyway, it's also a big deal that as of 2013, they committed to the idea that design thinking is as essential to innovation and customer experience as the technology, research, and science that enables it by creating the position of CDO. Eric Quint joined 3M to fill this critical role following a long and distinguished career at Royal Philips Electronics, where he evolved from designer to design leadership. We'll let him fill you in on the details because it's pretty fascinating, so let's talk to Eric.
My name is Eric Quint. I'm living in Minneapolis, and I am the Chief Design Officer for 3M Company. And so why this role? Because I'm very passionate about bringing design leadership to another level and drive design excellence for large enterprises, which is, I think, a specialism that has still a long way to go.
Yes, I love that that is your goal and your passion. And it's so important. Design leadership is such an important role that we don't talk about enough. And so that's why we're talking to you. So thank you. But I want to go back to the beginning. I want to learn a little bit more about you. What was your family like? Where did you grow up? And, you know, what was your youth like?
Yeah, so I grown up in the south of the Netherlands. So I'm a Dutch boy here. And I have a family with I have three brothers. Both my parents are still alive, which is pretty unique. They are 93 and my mom is getting 90 soon. And so you can imagine that, well, particularly when I was young, my daddy was an economist at an investment bank. And that was a bit of an inspiration for me as well, because he brought always these real life cases at home on, you know, entrepreneurship and the challenges that you have to drive innovation. And I remember at the kitchen table with the three brothers having discussions about all of that. And so I think that inspired me partially to do what I do now. It's a fascinating world to create, I think, and create new and create the unexpected. And so the learning from that is that if you get that at the kitchen table, it starts to become a bit part of your thinking and your DNA.
Yeah.
And so I still every day have a lot of advantages of all of this, because it reminds me in big, complex decision making that I have in my job to go back to the roots. And so that is very helpful.
Just a quick side question here. Do you have a kitchen table in your current home that functions in the same way?
Well, actually, I have a kitchen table in my home, but also when I created the new design center, I made sure that we have a 10-meter-long kitchen table in the design center.
So, in addition to the kitchen table, how did your creativity start to show up in your youth? How did you start expressing yourself?
Yeah, so I think it all starts with what is referred to as curiosity.
Mm.
So it's just asking yourself the question of where things come from and how things work. And then that's the first part. The second part is then go and explore. And I think go and explore with courage, because I can tell you in some of these explorations, things went completely wrong, where you think you can take apart a particular product and feel confident that you can put it back again, and then it doesn't work anymore. So, but all of that experimentation is, I think, giving you the learning of, you know, doing it with courage and go and find out where the wonder comes from. And so I started to do that pretty early, and I was always making and creating things with, you know, the Lego, of course, is a great example for everybody. But later I remembered you had these first kits that you could build your own radio. And I was, I think, 9 years or so, and I built my first radio. And then later I built my first guitar. I was probably just entering on high school. And so I was always creating things. And so I think, indeed, it is the interest in technology and later in art and music, and driven by that curiosity and exploration and doing all of that with courage, I think, is what made me a designer.
And I do think the Dutch society is very invested in design. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful programs and there's so much exposure all around you there versus other places in the world. And I think it's an incredible experience to grow up somewhere that has such appreciation for design and the arts and invests so much money and so much energy in, you know, exposing youth to design.
Yeah, I think it comes down also to having a vision about that. Mm-hmm. And I think the country has a vision about
it.
And so if I look to it, and I traveled a lot around the world, then there's only a few countries, like, for instance, Singapore as well, that have a vision about how to drive society and innovation. And so for me, it comes down to aligning what you do in your departments of economic affairs, education, and culture and art. And I think that is what the Dutch were doing, I think, maybe already 20, 30 years ago. And so you see the results, where they have great designers, architects, musicians, fashion designers. Well, it's all in the creative, I would not say only creative economy, of course it is, but also driving innovation. I think it is a recipe for driving innovation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And then you ended up going to Design Academy Eindhoven, which is an excellent design school. So many great designers have come out of that program, and you got a degree in mechanical or industrial designs. What was college like for you?
Yeah, so actually, to be precise, I have a degree in mechanical and industrial engineering.
Engineering.
And so I'm an engineer of origin. And later I did the industrial design course at the Design Academy.
Oh, okay.
And so this was a bit driven by me being at college, and I had no clue what to do. You know, I had to make a choice. And then I was in music, I was in art, I was in technology, which was all nice things. And so I started to realize that maybe it's better not to make my profession from my most passionate hobby, which is music. And so I started to look for a job and a profession that was merging the technology and the art side, which brought me to industrial design. And so I started first to do the serious part of all of this, and that is the mechanical engineering. And then later I had some struggle in, you know, fulfilling that course, and I was interested in industrial engineering, which is more about designing organizations. And so that I learned a lot, and I use a lot nowadays as well. And then I went to the Academy of Art or the Academy in Eindhoven and did the course Industrial Design, which I loved. And I was able to do it in a very short time because of all my artwork that I did before and my mechanical engineering. So I was able to do it in 3.5 years instead of 5 years. And yeah, I liked it very much because finally I could be, say, in the field that I always dreamed of. And that was being that creator and that designer. And I remember that it felt like almost no effort to be in that college time. Whilst doing that mechanical engineering, that was a lot of hard work and effort. And although the number of hours that we were making as students in design were probably, you know, 2 times as much as we were doing in mechanical engineering, because design never stops. Mm-hmm. And so that the effort was a lot, but it didn't felt like that. And so that gave me a good feeling and a confirmation that is probably what I really like to do. And so I finished the academy, and then I started to look for work.
So after school, what kind of work were you looking for, and what did you end up doing?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. If you do the academy in Eindhoven and nowadays in many colleges, you have a kind of an exhibition where you present your work, and not only for the graduation show, but also as an exhibition for that's a week up and running. And so I got interest of 3 different companies that were interested to offer me a job. And so one of them was Royal Philips Electronics at that time. Mm-hmm. And I never had any idea to work at a larger enterprise. I always thought you got lost in a large enterprise as a young designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that impression.
I was thinking, okay, well, you know, Philips was one of them that offered me a job, and then I had an office furniture company and a garden furniture company, because one of my graduation projects was about furniture, office furniture. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was talking with all of them, and in the end, I thought, maybe it is a good idea to offer that, you know, great pool of talent of Philips, because that design department there and that function was already up and running since 1925 when it started. And when I would agree to start a job, I would join a team of probably 120 people that time, mm-hmm. that were from all over the world, designers, that would give me a kind of a base for experimentation that would give me a lot of learning. And so I decided, because of all of that, because of the potential, to join the company and started my first job there.
Well, and you started your first job there, but you spent 20 years there or more, as I understand,
yeah.
in many different roles and capacities. I'm really interested in what that path was like and how you went from being a designer to in design leadership.
Yeah, so starting in a job that you never expected, I also stayed longer than I ever expected because, you know, every 4 or 5 years I get impatient and I think, okay, what next? And so you think, okay, I start a job for a couple of years and then we move on. And then, but then you start to explore the enormous possibility of such an enterprise in terms of different markets to work for, different consumers, regional, so global reach. So there's so much to learn that after 5 years, I started first as a designer for business to business, so to do electron microscopy and test and measurement equipment and healthcare. And yeah, that was amazing to learn what it is and how many stakeholders are involved in a discussion of making a good design for a business-to-business environment. Mm-hmm. That gave me interest also to explore a lot of new things. I remember I got the opportunity to explore computer-aided design, which was at that time not up and running. And so I was making my first designs on the computer and handing over files to the engineers and the model makers and the mold makers to do all the fabrication of it. And so that were all new areas, in user interface design and interaction design You know, in that time, you could be a designer of everything. You were actually, you were able to design the whole experience from the on-screen graphics to the packaging, to the product, to the communications. And I enjoyed that a lot. So my philosophy started there already. That was in the mid-80s and managed, you know, a total brand experience across all touch points. And the company allowed you to experiment in all of that. And that was great. And after 5 years of doing that, I started to do consumer lighting, and then I started to become a design manager in personal care. And I remember that somebody asked me the other day, so what did you do to get you on your career and where you are now? And I said, I have no idea. I just enjoyed. So the question was as if it was a planned process, very carefully planned. And, you know, I'm an opportunist and I go with progress. And so I jump on opportunities that I feel happy about. And so I jumped on all of these opportunities. And my answer was actually half of the roles that I got, I created myself.
That's design thinking at its best.
So you get that opportunity and you see things around you and you think, that was maybe my industrial engineering background. If we start to organize things differently, then we can be more powerful. And so you realize, and that's one of the lessons that I learned, is that as a designer, you can have great ideas, but there's a challenge. The challenge is to get it through the system and commercialize it in the end, to the end, so that the products really hit the market and are used by users in big quantities. But the other thing is that you start to see at a certain moment in time that you start to influence and impact, say, innovation and development processes. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you only have 24 hours in a day. So in order to amplify that impact and influence, you have to start to think differently about your role. And so that's where leadership automatically came in, because you start to ask for another person next to you, and then you have suddenly a year later 4 people working for you, and then before you know, you got 100 people working for you. And so that's how, so the mechanism is not career so much that is driving it, but it is more impact and influence. And what are the mechanisms that you can use to collaborate in teams to amplify the impact that you can have? And so that brought me to leadership roles. And so from there, I did many different leadership roles and global leadership roles. So.
I'm so happy to hear you break it down like that for us. I do think that once you start to, as a designer, once you start to take everything apart and tinker with it, you can't help but want to affect the system itself. And then once you figure out how to tinker with the system, then you start to understand that the system exists in an even bigger system, and that's the system you mentioned of innovation and development. And as one person, you start to have to amplify that, and that makes perfect sense. And your trajectory to leadership seems so clear now. But I still want to wrap my head around. So in 2013, you joined 3M as chief design officer, and I'm a huge 3M nerd. Like, I get very excited about space age polymers and nanotechnology and all of this stuff. I've actually visited the campus, and it's definitely my most geek-tastic day ever. I loved it. Mm-hmm. But it's an enormous role. I mean, 3M is a huge company, and I wonder if you can help us, like in layman's terms, help us wrap our heads around just what that means for an innovation powerhouse like 3M. What is a chief design officer do?
Yeah, so if you look to how my role is defined, then it's in fact driving design and creativity for the company globally, and make sure that we manage multidisciplinary teams and strengthen our innovation and brand experiences around the world. Well, that's one sentence. And that's a huge task in a company that is, more than 90,000 people, 70 countries, 5 business groups, 24 divisions, and then they have 46 technology platforms. But luckily, there's one common link here, and that is the one curious culture that the company has. And so that brings me back to my youth again, where I feel that connection going on. And so if you think about all of that and all these high complex tasks, it is actually the challenge is to bring it back to simple things. And so what I did when I came on board, I realized that this is a heavy science technology company And so one side of the brain is overdeveloped. And there's me and the designers come in and bring the other side of the brain and try to get a collaboration going and bring new thinking. Mm-hmm. Because for me, technology is an enabler. And so design is there to help to apply that technology in a meaningful way. And so that's what designers do. And so if you think about that, then what I started to do is first to create a vision, a clear vision. And that vision was helpful because I look at a vision as being the lighthouse. It helps you to understand where to go on the longer term. But then you can be very good in describing your lighthouse vision, but you have to break it down in steps and make a roadmap how to get there. And so actually what I did is I applied design thinking to my role. Everything I have done is applying design thinking. So understanding who are my stakeholders, understanding what the complexity of the problem is and the opportunities are. And then all of that gives you input, discussions with many people, to give you a kind of a roadmap and approach of how to tackle this in a highly complex environment where we have all of these people and businesses and markets that we work for and geographies. And so, yeah, design thinking is the key. And so when I started to reflect on that, I started to realize that, actually going back to my youth, it seems I have that kind of design thinking DNA that I apply all over the place, whether it is to me and my personal challenges that I now and then have, or whether it is on a job and doing a design project, or whether it is the design of an organization like I do now. And I'm also involved in designing and helping to apply design thinking in community enterprises, which is more the city, and you can even go bigger. I posted once a question as like who will be the next and the first chief design officer on country level, which is a minister probably somewhere. But I think that kind of thinking is, I think, valuable in many different places, nonprofit, profit, community. But it is also you can scale it up from very close to yourself on personal level to very big world topics.
Definitely. And since you've been with 3M, you've done quite a bit. You oversaw the implementation of a new corporate identity. And now 3M has a brand new design center, which I hear is very exciting and awesome. And we'd love to come visit.
Yep. So, <You're welcome>.
Thank you. I would love to hear about what you're focused on now. But actually, before we do that, can you just talk a little bit about the new corporate identity and the design center and how you were involved in that, and then tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now?
Yeah. So if you think about me being in that role, I see a lot of challenge with many other leaders in putting design on the agenda in an appropriate way. And so I use what I refer to as the three A's, which is the A of awareness, appreciation, and ambassador. So you can have an expectation that you have and you want to create, of course, excitement with your colleagues across the organization. But, you cannot expect them being an ambassador if they do not appreciate what you do. And they cannot appreciate what you do if they don't have any awareness of what you do. And so it all starts where I see a lot of designers go wrong. They are having high expectations on that ambassadorship. But they totally forget about explaining what design is about or what design is doing and how design can create value and how we can collaborate together. So the theme that I introduced was referred to as collaborative creativity, because that's for me equal to design thinking. Design thinking is solving things together, complex things together, take people and users as the center for creating the insights that is driving you to the best solutions. And you run it in a very creative way. And of course, you use a lot of post-it notes by doing all of that.
Well, I'm sure those are very abundant in your office.
Yeah, they are. But anyhow, so you are in that role and you are driving all of that. And then so you look to your roadmap and you come into the company and you have a few observations about how fragmented the company is in terms of their brand and how many opportunities we have there. And so all the things that I have done so far are all things that are contributing to the longer vision. So that means that it was a great opportunity that the company created a new vision with the new CEO that we got that started a year before I started. And that new vision was great and was talking about improving people's lives more or less and using our technologies and products and innovation to do that. But, you know, you can have that great vision, but it is also important that you link that vision to a brand platform and to an identity. And so if you are able to do that, then our own colleagues can better internalize all of that and can really act on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a great collaboration with the chief marketing officers, and we worked together as almost two partners in crime here to create that new brand platform, which was the science applied to life. And then we created a visual system around it. And that was for me a great opportunity to show to a global organization the impact of design, because when that was launched, the impact was all over the world because we created guidelines and frameworks and did training sessions. And that was a great opportunity to put the design function out there and show the impact. And that was a measurable impact as well. I remember we did the first year introduction, and then Interbrand was ranking us. And we went, I think, in that year, 1 billion up in our brand equity. Just because of the fact that we were managing our, let's say, brand more thoughtful. And they wrote a great article about it because we were then one of the top 10 risers in the ranking. And so they were writing a story about that and said, hey, what all of these great companies have in mind, the top 10 on the list, as well as the ones that are rising so fast, is that they put design at the center of their strategy. And it is not about design as aesthetics, but it is design as a strategy.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big on that. It is not on the aesthetics. You know, designers, that's implicit. Get over it. We can make beautiful things. But it's all about the strategy.
Yes.
So what and how can we strategize design to create the best value for our customers as well as for us as a company as well. And so we were in that kind of momentum. And then we were growing the team, because when I came on board, we had maybe 20, 25 people. And we have now 140 people. And they needed to have a place. And so I was talking to the company and say, hey, you know, scientists need laboratories. And, you know, administrative people need offices. But designers need a design house, a studio. And so I started to work with an architect and actually started to design this the design center ourselves. And this is actually a design center made for our designers and made by our designers under my direction, and to have that collaborative creative space that we can use to do the job that we need to do. And so that design center is opened in 2016, halfway the year, and it took us 9 months to build. And it became a kind of a new standard for working and also interior experience for the company. And so the rest of the building is now remodeled as well. And a lot of I can tell you, the long kitchen table,
yes,
shows up in every floor now. And so,
I love it.
So that's what they liked it so much. They asked me to do all of the interior design. And I said, well, you know what? I'm not the chief interior designer here. I'm the chief design officer. But I'm happy if the work that we have done is inspiring you guys to do what we need to do. So yeah, so this is a bit of the projects that we're doing, and my focus now is a lot on scaling our global team. So last year we opened a design studio in Tokyo. We're opening now one soon in India, and later the year in China. So we are expanding the team dramatically, and that is also to work together with our strategy colleagues, business colleagues, and marketing colleagues to even make better products, prepare ourselves for the future. So that's a very exciting journey, and it's very much appreciated because, again, I'm driven by progress. And so if you look over your shoulder and you see the progress that we have made,
yeah,
then that is very rewarding.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises. You must be addicted to being at the front edge of progress.
Well, I am.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's painful now and then as well.
Yes.
Because you have all of these, yet another great idea or not, but at least you dive into it. And it's a bit like, if you have great ideas, they are per definition a disturbance of what the status quo is.
Correct.
And so it comes always with a lot of painful discussions. Because one way or another, designers are masters in bringing other people out of their comfort zone. And so one of my philosophies is that I think the designers themselves should be a bit more trained in bringing themselves out of their comfort zone and using themselves a bit more, the empathy that they are gifted with, in order to be more effective in driving design and creativity in large organizations. Because this is not a job for a pop star designer. This is a job where you are able to make the right connections, engage with the right people, be very patient, and lead by example on creativity. And so yeah, I love to talk about this, because you see, there's a lot of attention given to designers that do these great artistic things. I like that aesthetically very much, high quality there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look to the impact, it's very much on impacting the dialogue than impacting through solutions that really hit the marketplace. And so I think there's these hundreds of designers in big companies that nobody knows about them. They are anonymous. And they do all of their great work. And so I'm very passionate about that and talk about that.
Yeah, well, we're very passionate about talking about it, too. And I'm really happy that you said that you have to have a lot of painful discussions at that front edge of progress, because you're disrupting the status quo. But it's how you help bring people aboard, help them create awareness, appreciation, and become ambassadors. So it sounds like you're advocating for all designers to become also better communicators, and they're already gifted with empathy. It sounds like you also apply your patience in a really meaningful way. Do you have any other tips, communication tips, that we can take in order to become better designers and leaders?
Yeah, so for me, it's all about transformational leadership in the end. So again, having great ideas is great, but we have tons of ideas. It is all about getting people behind your idea in order to realize it and make it successful. And so, yeah, well, in big companies, I see a tendency that they try to have the conversation through Excel sheets, PowerPoint sheets, and numbers. And that's not my way of doing it. But if you think about the design center, you know, of course, we have done our homework. We know the benchmark. We have some figures. But that's not what it is about. For me, it's all about going in there with a vision, having a vision first. Secondly, your storytelling. You have to put things into context. Your storytelling is helping you to help other people to understand what your vision is about. So you have to help them to make the connect.
Yeah.
And then I think the passion is what is important as well. So it is the storytelling and the passion that can inspire people to come along with you in your thinking. And if you then implicitly, because that's for me implicit, have some numbers to back it up, that's great.
Yeah.
So I remember when I was talking with the operating committee about my plan, I shared my strategy and my vision here, and I started to talk about how the space could look like. But when we had the dialogue and we finished up, I handed over a fake New York Times article that I just dreamed up. And I designed like a New York Times article. And it was all me talking about my vision about how that creative center could fit in the total of the company and what my vision was about. And so later they told me they never had experienced ever anything like that. And that was another inspiration for them to get information about my vision and where I wanted to take the company going forward on creativity and design.
That is so fascinating because it was storytelling, but it was also that you created an experience for them so they could engage their senses and their imagination in order to realize your vision. I also love that you said passion, because I'm a firm believer that passion can't really be faked, and it's totally contagious. It's more contagious than almost anything. And if you're able to communicate your vision with passion, and I don't mean theatrics, I just mean with that internal
authentic
flame burning, then people are more inclined to listen and more inclined to feel your passion. It's an intangible.
It's what you say, creating the experience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
We do it all the time on behalf of our customers, but if we would apply it to ourselves, like the empathy to connect with our colleagues in a different way and use the storytelling to inspire and be authentic in your passion, then that is, I think, the cherry on the cake. That said, you need to have your numbers anyhow there. And I think what I see designers do too often is they start to try to connect by imitating and copying the behavior of their business people.
Yeah.
And that's not good, because they lose all the essence of what a designer is about. So don't try to connect by being the same as the partners that you want to connect with. Try to be authentic. Try to be solid on what a designer is about and what not. And then bring it with passion and inspiration and a good storytelling.
You make it sound so easy.
Yeah.
Well, I practiced a couple of years. So.
I kind of want to learn a little bit more about you. I mean, you do so much at work, but you know, you're a creative person, and you've always been an appreciator of the arts and of music, but you're also a musician. So I would love to know more about what do you love about music, and how does it stimulate you, not only creatively, but just how does it feed your soul as a human?
Well, there's a few dimensions to music that are amazing, I think. We talk in design so much about creating ultimate experiences, brand experiences. I think the best experiences that we can learn from is the one from the theater entertainment industry, mm-hmm. because they are able to bring in experiences that really touches people's hearts, and you know, the tears come up and you get passionate about things, and you create your heroes, you know, the ones that singers or artists that you admire. And I think that's what the inspiration is for me from the entertainment industry, but particularly music. The other one is, I talk a lot about collaboration and creativity. And if you think about playing in a band, I like the fact of real-time creativity. In design, we don't have enough real-time creativity. So this is where I like the improvisation. And I think improvisation is a great way to educate yourself and train yourself. And so it's your gymnastics of creativity on the spot.
Yeah.
You know, in a band, if you're on the stage, you have to listen to each other and have the empathy. You have to have anticipating the interaction that is going on with the audience and amongst the band members. And you have that real, if it is about jazz, it is about the improvisation where you have to be creative on the spot. And so I love all of that. So real-time creativity is my gymnastics for the creativity that I apply into my job. And it is the ultimate experience. When I say did the interior for my office, I had an opportunity to go into the art collection of 3M. So they have a huge art collection. And so they allowed me to go in there and select it for the studio, which is a 40,000 square foot studio, a lot of pieces of art, beautiful. And then I bumped into those three photographs of jazz musicians. And I thought, it can't be the case. This is almost, you know, serendipity.
Yeah.
I put them all three in my office. And then I had a kind of a reflection there. And the three photos are from Miles Davis, Sarah Vaughan, and Art Blakey. And so I was thinking and looking through those three images, and I thought, okay, you know what? Miles Davis, trumpet player, he reinvented himself several times throughout his career. And for me, he's the kind of ultimate innovator in music. He also gave a platform for many young musicians to join his band and learn and become a coach and give them guidance. For me, Miles Davis was the innovator there. And then if you think about Sarah Vaughan, she's a singer. Well, if somebody can get into your soul by storytelling, then it is Sarah Vaughan. And so for me, that she represents that ultimate storytelling piece. And then Art Blakey is the drummer. And so he is, for me, representing timing and rhythm. And what is more important in innovation than timing?
Right.
And so I was sitting and reflecting on this, and I thought, okay, those three images, they reflect and summarize what more or less my passion in life is. And so that is those three images. And that was so amazing. So music means a lot for me.
Do you play instruments yourself as well?
Yes. I play guitar. And not enough. I'm very busy, but yeah, the guitar is my instrument.
Nice. What kind of music do you typically like to play? Is it rock or?
It's all, it is jazz. Improvised.
Ah.
It is, I'm doing improvisation already since I was a young kid, 17, 18. I never was really in a band. I always was a guest in a band and played all my way around. I couldn't stick to one band. It was too limiting for me. And so I like Brazilian jazz music, Octave de France. It's all improvisation.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
So that's interesting. When I was a couple of days in the company, they asked me a question. That was a broadcasted interview, and they asked me the question about my music. And I said, well, you know, I'm a jazz guy, and maybe it's also reflected in my leadership style. And so the way I look at it, you can have a sheet of music, and you can be asked in a symphony orchestra to play every single note and interpret it in the best way emotionally, which is a tough job, but not my job. And so I said, well, I'd rather give my team the key of the music and the rhythm in order for them to flourish instead of giving them a sheet of music and ask them to play every note. So that's a bit the way I look at what music means for me and how I bring music forward to my team. And I use a lot of music stories in explaining what we need to do in design as well.
I love that analogy. Just giving people the tools that they need to be creative and be still be who they are. Yeah.
But use their own skill set to improvise. Yeah. You're not utilizing your talent to its highest potential if you're telling them what to do. The way you're getting the most out of them is giving them the space to improvise and giving them the support and the tools to do that, but also the encouragement and the collaborators and the culture of the improvisational atmosphere.
Well, that's the essence of innovation, I think, and driving innovation and creativity. Because, you know, with the experiment and the improvisation, you run the risk that you go completely wrong. So in an innovative culture, you allow people to make mistakes and learn from it. And that's everything that is linked to design thinking as well. Is design thinking is do quick exercises, bring it back to your customer and learn from it, and then and maybe you have a failure. And so I remember when I started to talk with the senior management here, when I just came in, I said, well, you know, if I can help with my design team to get involved early on in projects, and we can come up with the right arguments to stop new initiatives, we create a hell of a lot of value for the company.
Oh, yeah.
So I used... Yeah, and so the way I look at insights is people insights and doing research in order to support the design process. Insights are so often used to stimulate the new and the new ideas. And I say, no. We use insights to make thoughtful decisions and be conscious about what we are not going to do. That's the value of insights, even more than helping you on the new and the upside of things. And so that's one of the challenges, I think, in many big enterprises, because we have so many options and there is so much talent around and opportunity that we have to come up with a discipline that and a mechanism that helps us to stay on track. And so insights is a way to do that.
So I want to ask you a question that applies to culture at large, to society in general. since you have demonstrated and illustrated so clearly how design thinking can impact every stage, how can we as a society use design thinking to encourage more inclusivity in the pipeline of future design leadership? So not necessarily at 3M, but just in the culture at large.
You can imagine if you have been through a lot of different roles and end up at a large role that I have now, then you start to think about what next in terms of where are the next leaders in design and how can we help them to become even better in a society that is getting more complex even. Mm-hmm. Managing that complexity and helping young people to share your experiences is one of my motivators to do a lot of keynote speeches and publicizing about things, because I think it is so enormously important that we start to prepare the next generation of design leaders to do even a bigger job than what we have been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a lot of that work in my work to the Design Management Institute, but also in society, you know, having a dialogue on how design can be linked to a community enterprise. I was talking before on the projects we do with the city of Minneapolis, where I remember with the director of arts and creative economy, I was once giving a keynote on driving creativity and design in a business enterprise, like I do, in comparison to a community enterprise. And then you see that the dynamics on community level is completely different, because decision-making there is driven by politics and by tax investment. And so it's another mechanism, but the principles are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a strong believer that, if the audience for a company is customers, an audience for a city or a country is citizens. And by coincidence, they're all the same people.
Because
those people, they use products as well. And so
customers are citizens, true.
and the other way around.
Yes.
And so what you see is that I think you can use the principles of design thinking and design leadership and in all of these circumstances to make a better world in the end.
So speaking of a better world in the end, just hypothetically speaking, I want to just kind of fantasize with you for a second, because you do have such a magical brain. If you were to take your wildest idealism and focus it like a magic laser beam onto a single issue that's affecting the world, what one thing would you solve so that future generations just don't even have to deal with it?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, but I would refer to scarce sources like water and air and food and energy. So if you think about circular economy and sustainability, these are all big topics. And so I think if designers can help to be more thoughtful in using or reusing our sources, that would be great. And I think that is one of the major tasks of future designers and young designers. I think you see a lot of passion with young designers about that as well, because they are pretty aware of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not unlimited availability of all of that. And so I think that would be great if designers can contribute to that. The other thing is, I think if you think about how to contribute to it, another passion I have is diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to be effective is, in my opinion, to be inclusive. And so make sure that if you work on these big world challenges, that we do it in an inclusive way and with a lot of diversity thinking in there, so that we make sure that we're not getting too limited on our solutions, but start to think big in getting the solutions tackled in the right way. Because it's not the real solutions we are not going to solve in little single corners around the world. These challenges ask for community and multicultural approaches that hopefully give the right answers.
You're going to have to build a kitchen table that's like 60 miles long.
Probably, yeah. Food Connect. So that's always a great way to connect with people.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm interested to know what's coming up that you're really excited about that you can actually talk about.
Yeah, I'm very excited about one project, which is a big project, and that is what I call our innovation centers. So go back to the new brand platform that we introduced in 2015, 2015, which is called Science Applied to Life. And so if you think about science, that's what we are as a company for more than 100 years. And so we have really best-in-class scientists and an R&D community. If you think about life, then we have great innovation centers where we connect day in, day out. We have actually 55 design innovation centers that are connecting with our customers in the field every day. And then if you think about the Apply 2, I mentioned already before, the design center and designers are the ones that are connecting the great technologies with the life part, with people. And so I'm very excited about the innovation centers, because when I came in, my observation was they were sure not on brand, because we didn't have any global corporate identity. And there was a lot of different storytelling going on. And so I started a project where I came up with an idea where I said, well, maybe it should be less sharing the scale of our things that are our products, and focus more on the scale of our thinking, because we have 91,000 bright minds in the company, and they can help our customers and our consumers to do a better job and improve things. And so we are going to open soon, at the end of this month, a new customer innovation center that is based on that new principle, and is a great space where we can bring 3M to the world and the world to 3M in order to have the dialogue about how we can collaborate and improve lives around the world. And so that concept is a blueprint for many of them to follow. And I always said, you know, if you are a global company, let's make sure that we tell our story in a consistent and a high quality way. And so that innovation center for me is a representation of a new way talking about our company, where we do not start with the technologies. Again, these are the enablers. It starts with the mega trends and the world challenges that we have and the challenges of our customers that we have, in order then to collaborate and use all of that brain power and the solutions that we have to progress. And so I'm very excited about that project.
So these innovation centers are open to the trade, to the public, to for inter-collaboration?
Yeah. So
How can I go? I need to go.
Yeah,
how do I get there?
I can always arrange something for you guys, but yeah, so the idea is that we engage with our customers. And I don't know, the 3M is a 85% B2B company, so we deliver great technology solutions for customers that have a consumer base in automotive or mobile telephony or in healthcare, industrial, in many different segments. And so they are welcome and visiting us. And the idea is then that after the tour, we have a great conversations with them to listen in to what keeps them awake at night and how we can help them with all of the knowledge that we have. We also, of course, open it up for educational institutes and for not for the public per se, because that would be not very manageable. But yeah, we try to also use these innovation centers to drive diversity in STEM and to get school kids over in order to make them enthusiastic about what technology and science is about and for them to learn what you can do with that. I don't know whether you realize there's a saying about 3M that within a radius of 10 feet in the developed world, you always will touch a 3M technology.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I wish I had been able to go to an innovation center as a kid. And I wish I had gone to space camp, but that's another issue.
I like
But I have to tell you a personal story, and I know you have to go, so I'll make it really fast. But I was, as a maker and a manufacturer, I was in a position where I was inventing a new piece of furniture with HDPE, which is high density polyethylene, and low density polyethylene. They're both polyolefins. They're, you know, designed to be very friction reducing, and therefore they're self-lubricating and adhesive resistant. But I needed to glue them, and I was able to find an adhesive rep from 3M. And of course you guys have an adhesive just for polyolefins. And it was such a structural bond that I was able to fold low density polyethylene into a chair bucket and glue it together. And it's so exciting.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is indeed all of these solutions. If it works, you don't talk about it anymore. You take it as a given. But behind all of that, there is a lot of scientific and invention time and exploration going into it. And I think that's the power of what 3M is about. For every challenge, we, one way or another, we can bring the right people together. And we have over 46 technology platforms that we can tap into. Yeah, across all of these industries, we have so many great solutions. And therefore, if you think about a designer, one of the reasons I joined the company is because of the huge potential of the company. And if you think about that, you know, we work for so many different countries, 70. We work for more than 24 divisions that are all different industry categories. And then we have those 46 technology platforms. This is like Walt Disney for designers, because endless exploration and journey is an adventure. And so that's a great place to be in.
I absolutely agree with you. It's like Walt Disney for designers. And if you install a webcam in those innovation centers, I won't be able to do anything else. I'll just bring it to
That sounds like a great idea.
I'll watch it all day long. It'll be better than like puppy cam. Can you tell our listeners where they can learn more about you personally and about the work you're doing at 3M on the web and social media?
Yes, of course, we have our company channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So that's on 3M company level. And then on design, we have our website that is 3M.com/design. We have our Twitter at 3M Design if you want to see what we do. And then myself, I'm on LinkedIn, and there's a lot of things out there on the internet on me sharing my thoughts and stimulating the dialogue on the what next on leadership in design.
Well, I want to thank you wholeheartedly for this stimulating dialogue. This has been really, really fascinating.
Yes.
And inspiring. And I am going to go nerd out with some of my my abrasives and adhesives and my safety gear.
This sounds great to me. So it was a pleasure to be talking with you guys. And I really, think it's fun. And I really appreciate to use a platform like this to share thoughts across the creative industry and inspire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you've done just that. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Holy fuck, Jamie. I'm sorry. I'm totally spazzing out right now.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so excited. Yes, I'm so excited.
You're so excited about adhesives. I've never heard anybody talk about adhesives the way that you talk about them.
Well, it's not even that I'm like a glue, like I'm sniffing glue all day. It's just that I was so excited that I found a solution to make something that didn't exist before. And 3M was able to support me in finding that solution. Mm-hmm. And then also they had already, you know, been doing the science that created the solution that led to my solution.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, he's when he said you can't, when he talked about 3M products being within a 10-foot radius?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about anything that's man-made, the reflective lettering on your street signs, it's the abrasives that were used to make your countertop, it's the safety gear the countertop contractor wore to prevent breathing in the particulate, it's the glazing on your windows, it's the film that keeps, what are those, ultraviolet light out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the adhesives that are holding skyscrapers, rocket ships, and airplanes together.
Yeah, it's this like unseen thing. And a lot of times it's, you don't even know it's there, or it's underappreciated. But then when you really do need to look for a solution and it's already there or they're developing it, you feel a sense of relief that like somebody is there still pushing forward.
Yes.
Even for the things that aren't instantly noticeable or immediately life-changing.
Yes. And I have asthma, so they, in a very real way, have helped me be a maker, which is really, by its very nature, hard on your respiratory system. But I have so much confidence in the 3M respirators and particulate masks that I can live and work and maintain my own health condition. I don't know. I'm getting like super TMI, but anyway.
No, but it does. It makes a big difference. It really does.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And I have confidence in that science that's backing it up. But more than anything, I thought what Eric Quint just did for us is he gave us that storytelling language that we all need to help wrap our heads around how design can really impact at the DNA level. Like when he talked about those three jazz mm-hmm. musicians and broke it down to like innovation and mentorship, to Sarah Vaughan being the storyteller who gets inside your soul, to Art Blakey with the rhythm and the timing, I was like, yes, mm-hmm. okay, now this is something everyone can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that passion was there too, because I'm clearly got a little infected.
Yeah, I liked his three A's, the awareness, yes. appreciation, and ambassador. I was so excited when he said that, because I immediately thought about like motivational posters and that those three motivational posters should be in every office. But I agree, like when, you know, when you have people working with you or for you and they're not fully understanding what they're doing or why they're doing it, or they don't know what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
they really can't go out into the world and be that ambassador, and they can't fully appreciate what they're doing and the role that they're playing in this whole thing. So like communication is incredibly important in leadership. And I think he broke it down in a way that was very easy to understand. And it seems so simple, but like when you're in it every day, sometimes it's really hard to like make sure everybody knows what's going on and like why you're doing what you're doing and the effects of what you're doing on life and the future. And I think it's really important to make sure that you don't lose that when you are leading a group of people down a path. They need to know like
yes.
what's going on and why they're doing it and what the left hand and right hand are doing. And yeah.
Yeah. And what the motivation is for you. I have felt that frustration. So it's one thing to come up with an entirely new vision, and then it's a completely new thing to try and communicate that vision to someone else. When it's still new, it's unfounded, it hasn't been tested and proven, and therefore you can't really defend it or justify it. And as designers, I know that we, you know, the critique process is a very important aspect of education in terms of being able to communicate your idea and receive feedback. But I don't think anybody explained it to me so clearly that it's not your job just to come up with the vision. It's your job to help get everybody on board with that vision. Like you really do have to educate everybody. And that education is a big part of the design process.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think once you know more, you can kind of see your place in the ecosystem and see your value in the process and appreciate that. And also appreciate everybody else who's working on the project with you.
Okay, I'm going to get a coffee mug with with the three A's on it. All right. Thank you so much for listening, you guys. And again, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And go to cleverpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter, read the show notes, and find out more about Eric's work.
You can also connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Clever Podcast. We always love hearing from you guys. This episode of Clever was edited by Ty Navaris and Alex Perez with music by L1011.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.